What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock. And yes, we've talked to Matt Vasgersian. We've talked to Nick Swisher on this. This is news for Eno. He had no idea, by the way. Look at his face. He's like, you talked to Nick Swisher? That was an unreal conversation. I've never met Nick Swisher before. And if you haven't listened to that episode yet, just go and do it. It's like 10 minutes. It is.
He's a ridiculous person.
I was holding on for dear life. Yes. It was awesome, though. It was just like, wow. Amazing energy.
It's a bit like talking to Brett Phillips.
Oh my God. I mean, I briefly chatted with Brett Phillips. I'm sorry, Brett, you're amazing too. But this is just my wife couldn't watch. It's too much for me right now. Eno Saris is here, by the way, guys. This is my latest guest. I know. So many random guests. No one expected this one. And we are like 7 weeks away from the end of the year. As always, we're going to talk about, of course, the pitcher that's on our mind. I have a question for Eno today. And as always, we're going to have the random side tangents here and there that you've come to expect from The Craft. But before I begin, Eno, who is the pitcher that you just cannot get out of your head?
Troy Melton.
Ah, of course. What do you got for us?
Troy Melton has, when he first came up, you know, I was worried that I was having a Bobby Miller stroke again. And you know, I think we on this broadcast and in other places were like, Troy Melton has everything you need. He has, you know, a wide arsenal. He has velocity. He has command. And, you know, one thing he didn't have at the time was strikeouts. Yeah. And so I worried that there was something that the model was missing and that, or that it was just going to be one of those guys that has good stuff, but it kind of is more in terms of suppressing balls in play than creating strikeouts. And that has been the case you know, overall for his career with a 21.6% strikeout rate, but his whiff rate suggests his strikeout rate could be higher. And recent splits suggest that there's kind of another level for him because, you know, since he first came up, he's had, like, in July, he had a 30% strikeout rate. In August, it's back down to 19%. I think the floor is super high for Melton because he has this wide arsenal. He has velocity. He has command. But there's something that's interesting about what he said to me when I talked to him about his cutter that stands out. He said, when I get to 95 on the cutter, I really start getting whiffs on the pitch. And he also agreed with me that sometimes he throws the cutter top rail for more of like a cut fastball type of thing. And sometimes when he throws it lower, he wants more of a slider movement on it, that he kind of uses it in different ways in different places, which I like. It speaks to his command. But this idea that he has better results on the 95 mile an hour cutter is right. He has a 33% whiff rate on 95 mile an hour cutters. It's 22% on everything below. And so that would be a legitimate way forward, except he's thrown 12 cutters at 95 miles an hour all year.
Well, so, is that all in that one game against the Angels?
I know. I'm worried that was like one shining moment. Yeah. That is like, you know, altering our overall appraisal of him, which is good pitcher, good park, you know, may have a good career, but does not seem like maybe a Cy Young winner in his current approach. You know, yeah. I don't think that there's a lot of people who can sit 95 on cutters.
Oh, right. Well, Cam Schlittler has a field day with that, right?
Right. But, you know, he also throws harder than Troy Melton's 96 average on the four seam, sure, you know? Right. So, I don't know. Like, you don't throw the cutter the same as the four seam. So you'd have to get his four seam up to 98, 99, I think, to really start accessing those whiffs. Yeah, and I don't really know why, because theoretically, at least, all his pitches are pretty good. I guess it's slider. I asked him if he thought he was a supinator, and he said he did think so, but his slider and curveball now are actually below average.
Oh, interesting. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like 88 Well, it's 80. Here's the thing. I've noticed this. I realize that Stuff Plus does not like a gyro slider that has extra sweep.
Like no, it doesn't. Yeah.
It really doesn't because it
wants 0-0.
It wants 0-0 and not 6 inches extra sweep. And that's so interesting to me because why wouldn't you want that? And that actually might tie into a conversation we have later on just about, is it easier to hit a wider one than a pure gyro, like with the angle of a bat almost because of where the ball would be and then where the bat would be, right?
It definitely looks like, I mean, sweepers are getting worse every year. And it's actually made me think a little bit about sweeper first pitchers. You know, we did a breakdown of Will Warren on Rates and Barrels. And, you know, I just realized that his results on a sweeper are getting worse every year.
Oh, interesting.
And his best pitch is a sweeper, and he's got like a 500 slugging on it over the last 3 years or something, or 450.
And who has the most, the strangest slider in the big leagues, you know?
Who does?
Tatsu Imai. And it's actually worked in his favor that it has, right?
I mean, you can be ahead of the model. You can be unique enough that you're ahead of the model, or you can be boring enough that you're behind the, like you're ahead of the model in the bad way where like,
yeah, right.
You know, right. Like hitters are telling people like sweepers aren't working like they used to. So
right.
a gyro with sweep, you know, it's along that continuum of going towards the sweeper.
And then I think of like Kumar Rocker slider and Bryce Elder slider and even like how Herman Marquez's curveball, that's a slider.
Both of those do better than their Stuff Plus numbers.
Yeah, and they are more like more on the vertical plane with that gyro going down, right? Something to think about there. That's really, really interesting. One article that I'm going to have to go to our staff and probably I'll just go to Nate Schwartz and be like, Nate, just write this article, please. Because he's incredible. He's already won an award for research articles. And it's something that I think is not talked about at all. And it's really, I've done a lot more of it just because I finally created a dashboard that had these numbers in front of me where I wasn't able to get them otherwise, which is the luck stat of strikeouts. You know, there is a luck stat involved in strikeouts. And it's very simple.
Is that the relationship between whiff rates and strikeouts?
Well, it explains it. It explains it. It's about it's how often do you get to two strike counts and how often do you put them away? Because the luck is, are you executing at that moment correctly? Right? And not just overall. Like, okay, cool. I get 20 whiffs in a game, but how many of them were at two strikes and how many of them were going after early or 0-1 or so, right? Mm-hmm. And you can actually even, it's makes all the sense. Like you can't have a lot of strikeouts with a low at bat put away rate, right? And there's two different ones. There's the ones of like when you have a two strike count against a batter, how many times did you get a strikeout eventually? And then there's like the per pitch one is when every time I throw it in a two strike count, right? So those are two separate ones. But I'm talking about the macro level. And you can even see this with Troy Melton. Like what I traditionally see for any sort of strikeout guy is that the put away rate overall is like 50%. Okay. That's like your baseline. And with Troy Melton, he had those 7-9-9 strikeout games. What do you know? 70%, 69%, 64%. And then since five strikeouts, 5-4-5, 36, 42, 29, 38%, right? Like you can just see it attached to this. And his average is around 43, 45. So in some ways I could say, okay, cool. He's just getting a little bit unlucky of when he's getting his whiffs because he's gotten double digit whiffs ever since the 9th of June when he started throwing more cutters. I mean, that's just, we know that. So there is always this like give and take of like, how much of it is luck there? How much is it just decision of the sequencing, you could say? How much is it the innate ability to do it then?
But there also could be pitches that could get whiffs in different counts.
There's like that too.
Like a swinging count, like a cutter may not be as good at getting whiffs in a traditional swinging count where they're looking for bend, right? They're not looking for the fastball. The cutter gets whiffs when they're looking fastball, but in a two strike count, they're looking for bend. And now all of a sudden the cutter doesn't, you know, it looks straighter, you know?
Yeah. And there's also been a whole thing about changeups getting more swing strikes, but not in two strike counts. Like the lowest correlation to a secondary with whiffs.
You're kind of like taking the ball the other way and just,
and you're
like
going for a fastball early and you'll get more easily fooled with the changeup. Right. But there that, so what I'm trying to get at is you can find a stabilizer for every pitcher for what should be their per game put away rate. And then you have oscillation, right? And that to me is where you get like a bit of the luck
factor. Where do you think Melton goes? You know, he's like a 45% guy. Like, he seems like he might be below 50. If 50 is the average, he might be below.
Yeah. Right. I just don't think he's like a 4-strikeout guy, 5-strikeout guy. Right. And I'm seeing this here of just like, right, those are the games where it's not even, he actually hasn't had a single game in the 50s of put away rate.
Right, like, which is where you normally live.
Lower yeah. Or like 60 and higher.
Well, I mean, just in our conversation, it's pretty interesting because he's like his cutter and his splitter are his best pitches other than his four seam, right?
Yeah.
And so if they're anticipating splitter more often in 2-strike counts and that's not getting whiffs, and they're anticipating bends, so the cutter doesn't look as strong in 2-strike counts, he might have a 2-strike put away problem.
Huh. What would you say is Troy Melton's best 2-strike put away rate pitch? Like, if he's going to get a strikeout, he's going to throw this. For how many times he's thrown it in 2-strike count, how often did that pitch get a strikeout? What would you say that is? Splitter?
Yeah.
Nope.
Four seam.
Nope. That's 18%. Splitter is 22%. Sinker, 22%. Cutter is only 17%.
So it's
a slider, 27%, right? Huh. And that's actually pretty good. I think of Tyler Glasnow's curveball as like the pinnacle of just always expecting that to be a high put away rate pitch. That is a 30%. Traditionally, you see around like 20-21% for 20-23% for secondary pitches, and then fastballs like 17-20. So it's just an interesting way of seeing variability, yeah. Right?
I got a name for you.
Please.
Gavin Williams. I'm not suggesting that Troy Melton is going to put away the curveball and get to 10 strikeouts, put away the cutter and get to 10 strikeouts. But what we saw from Gavin Williams early on was velo, some good bend, and, you know, some sort of a problem, you know, getting to the third strike, right?
Right.
And yes. he fell in love with the cutter, and I worked for a little bit, and then he went away from it. So what I'm suggesting is that Troy Melton is in the figuring it out phase, and that maybe there's a situation where he goes 50-50 in 2-strike counts, cutter, slider, and then the hitters have a harder time because if they sit cutter, they get slider. If they sit slider, they get cutter, you know, so he can play around with it on a different level. I bet there's an ideal mix for him. I'd love to, you know, look at their optimizers that they have, their AI machine learning optimizers, and be like, you know, what do you think is his optimal 2-strike pitch mix? And how is that different from what he's actually doing?
So for Gavin, I mean, yeah, he has a 53% general overall put away rate, but he also gets a 2-strike 61% of the time. And a lot of the guys that we see not get a lot of strikeouts struggle to even get to 2 strikes.
But that doesn't seem to be Melton's problem because he has great command. He gets
52% 2 strikes. But the thing is also, he's someone unlike Gavin who is going to have more contact. Like, guys are going to be swinging and making contact earlier.
Putting the cutter in play weekly. Yeah.
Right. And this is how guys like Cole Reagans and Blake Snell, who were higher walk guys, but also got strikeouts, this is what they would do. This is how they would tease around the zone and prevent those early balls in play, which meant that they weren't guys that were going to go 7-8 innings. And on the reverse of that, you had like Sandy Alcantara, who's someone who doesn't have as many 2-strike counts. Because he's constantly in the zone with those fastballs, and those are going into play, right? That is a showcase of strikeouts to me. That's not just shown in CSW necessarily. It's not just shown in whiffs. That is about, okay, how often are you putting yourself in a position to strike out a batter? And then how efficient are you when you get there, right? And those are the two elements that can be lucky, because maybe you just face a team that takes pitches all day, you know? Maybe it's a team that's just swinging first pitch far more than usual, right? That you can't necessarily control. So I got to do a bigger article on it. I'm really curious what comes out for Troy Melton. He is gaining 2 strikes far fewer than Gavin Williams just right now this season. He's a 61% 2-strike guy, 52% for Troy Melton. And I think 52% is kind of on the lower end if I had my way here.
He's at 49% zone percentage and was higher in the past, Troy Melton. So I wonder how zone percentage figures in here too. Could Melton be out of the zone earlier, longer, more?
Right, teasing a bit. But then at the same time, like then Melton would not be going not 7 innings as much as he is, right? And that's great. You know, so I don't know if I necessarily want that to change. Like, what do we have right now? We don't really want to change Troy Melton. 13 games, 7-1 146 ERA.
I know, but like crazy strand rates.
Still,
all the luck numbers are freaking out.
Right, because luck numbers are rooted in strikeouts to me. I mean, really, it's like strikeouts and walks, and are you allowing any home runs? That's just to me how it is. And by the way, Troy Melton has allowed 8 home runs this year, and 4 of them came in one game. So something to be said about that too. But yeah, I just can't do the ERA estimators. I don't know. It's just, that's not the story. That's just, I get that part. Okay. I'm going to tell you a guy I'm thinking about, you know. All right. Mm-hmm. It's someone that we used to really love. We loved this guy. And I thought he was underrated. He had, there was another pitcher, a hot shot that is now injured this year, but Spencer Strider, same year, did kind of the same exact thing. Fastball, slider, had an amazing year, and it's just really fallen off since. He got injured. We didn't really see him much. He was in the pen for a bit this year, but now he's gotten his chance with the Astros again to start. You know what I'm talking about, right? You know?
Emi?
Christian Javier.
Oh, yes, Javier. I'll let you talk, but I mean, there's definitely something improving recently.
Well, there's two things. He's getting strikes. He just got a 72% strike game. But you know what I'm going to say that he's added that it makes me so happy, you know?
That's right. He added a cutter.
He has a cutter. He threw it 15% of the time and for 92% strikes. And this is a guy who has a 93 mile per hour fastball and 80 and change sweeper / curve, whatever you want to call it. And then you also have that changeup at 87 that has entered the fray recently in the recent years, but then you have an 89, 90 mile per hour cutter that gets him strikes where the sweeper and the change, we didn't really know if it would get strikes. I feel like we are so close to Javier being something, and this is the perfect showcase of 2 strike rate and put away rate. In his last game, 5 innings, 4 runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts, 5 whiffs. You're like, dude, what? Come on. 63% 2 strike rate, but only a 13% put away rate, right?
Which he's not had a trouble with in the past, the put away.
So that feels like it should open up, right? That feels like, okay, you should be able to throw those high 4 seamers at 93 with 17 vert, with a very flat attack angle. And that should work, but it's not. And I got to think that it might change for
it. It is working to some extent. The game against the Angels was great. And I bring up the game against the Angels because that's when he broke out the cutter. So
yeah,
we have 3 starts now, one with 7 strikeouts and 5 innings and 0 walks, another with 2 strikeouts and 6 innings and 0 walks, another one with 2 and 5 with 1 walk. So at least it seems to have helped him with his command, which is always iffy with Javier. And there's actually 2 things going on that I like, which is that he's got some of his vertical movement back.
Yes.
It's not quite back to where it was, but
it was 22, right? When he first came out. Okay. So not sticky stuff. Just right after.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right around that. It's like after sticky stuff, Javier, but by adding the cutter, he's also taking pressure off the 4 seam. So what we've seen with between the added movement on the 4 seam and the added cutter is that his 4 seam jumped to an above average pitch in those 3 games, which may lead to, if your best pitches that are performing in a certain game are a 4 seam and a cutter, may lead to decent outcomes but not decent strikeouts.
Right.
But his overall stuff plus only over 100 for the last 3 games. Before that, it was in the 90s. So like the model loves what he's doing. Yeah, the model
loves what he's doing. Take this.
Padres are hot as hell, dude. I mean, that I don't know if that how much that should factor in.
Oh my gosh.
Merrill is hot. Like even Fermin is hot. So
Ty France is hot.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So I picked up Javier in an AL only. I picked him up in a 15 team league.
I think it's right around the corner, honestly. I mean, I'm telling you right now, I rarely see put away rates this low. 15% overall, 13% is just.
And he has a great sweeper, and the changeup's okay. 2 strikes.
He should put that together, and he has not gotten much of a chance as a starter. Like, it's only two starts in a row now. One was in relief for Amai after another 0.2 inning disaster. So he's finally getting back into something here. And I wouldn't be shocked that he turns on a start that gets everybody focused on him in the near future. So Christian Javier is my guy this week. I was going to mention Jacob Lopez because I've just been so focused on him nailing down his thing. As the same thing he did last
year. We decided just to go behind the scenes for a second. There was a time when I like sent you a list of
K-minus walk rate.
Yeah. Yeah. Improvers. And you were like, I don't want to talk about Jacob Lopez.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was, okay. That was not yet because there's no way. Like, it was the July 19th was 2 walks and 6 strikeouts. And then it was 4 walks and 4 strikeouts. And I'm including that in his hot stretch. So to be fair, I want to say that was in May or something along those lines that you did that. I can't remember, but I was waiting for him to do this, which is cutters over the plate, 4-seamers going off the plate and teasing batters, and then the sweeper underneath. And that's what he's doing. I mean, the last game was actually weird. He reversed the cutter and the 4-seamer, but the roles were filled. It's 5 straight games of double digit whiffs of at least a 13% swing strike rate in that time. He has like a 30% K rate in those 5 starts with like a 2.36 ERA and a 1.10 whip. He's doing it again. You know, it's 5 straight.
I'm terrified of a guy with a 91 mile an hour fastball.
I don't care. You know what? You can run faster than it. It's fine. Don't be scared.
There's a league wide, we're down to almost, I think it's like 12% of fastballs are under 92 miles an hour now.
So no Cody Bradford for you.
Yeah. Well, if I had to choose between the two, I'm taking Cody Bradford.
No.
Yeah, man. I can't stand Sacramento either. Look, listen, Lopez got Texas at home. I don't want that start. Not because of Texas, but because it's at home. And then the next start he's got is at Houston, which is maybe a fine start. Maybe you want to start him for that. But, you know, Houston can put runs up too. So,
I mean, it's 26 innings of a 16% swing strike rate. And 3 of those games were in Sacramento.
I don't trust Sacramento. Although it's supposedly very month to month in Sacramento. So if it's cooler now and the winds are going the other direction, maybe. It's just I just don't trust it to be the same.
Just look at the strike zone plots and you'll see the consistency of the cutter, the 4-seamer, and the sweeper locations. And then I suggest cross-reference it to what Jacob Lopez did during his hot streak last year, where guess what? He was still in Sacramento. And it was the same. It's the same thing. I'm just going to throw that out there. That's all. All right. I want to shift gears here. And we're going to talk about the meat of this podcast now. Because we have an interesting topic we want to talk to you guys about when it comes to cut fastballs. We're going to talk about that after this break. All right. So this is an interesting conversation I was really looking forward to with Eno here. It's about cut fastballs. And I actually mentioned this on the Corner podcast with Eric, that I recorded this morning that you'll hear after this one. So figure that out, guys. But cut fastballs, I used to call it the plane of 1,000 cuts, and that is the y-axis. If you look at the whole pitch movement plot, it is just a vertical line. And any time back before I really understood pitch movement and I just had this blob on Savant, anytime I looked up a 4-seamer and I saw it go near that line, I was like, that's not going to earn whiffs. It just wasn't. And it's back again. I kind of got rid of it a little bit with Cease. Cease was like, okay, you know what? I'm doing this and it's still very effective. But before the podcast, I wanted to bring this up with, you know, so we both created searches for pitchers with 4-seamers that are above 94 miles per hour, is a starting pitcher, and has raw horizontal movement of 3 inches or less, that is going more and more cut. And I got to tell you, I'm going to do 2 different lists here, all right? And try to tell me if there is one in this that is legitimate whiff pitch. I think there is maybe 1 or 2. From 2025, Cade Horton, Andre Pallante, Mason Barnett, Tyler Glasnow, not a whiff 4-seamer, guys. Kyle Bradish, Hunter Dobbins, Richard Fitz, Brandon Young, Nick Pivetta, Jansen Junk, Luis Gil, Bradley Blaylock, David Festa. That's from 2025. Then you have 26, which is Dobbins, Glasnow, Palante, some the same, Horton, Bradish, Pivetta, Heal the same, but you also have Luminder Avila. You have Gabriel Hughes, what do you know? Andrew Painter and Ryan Nelson also in there. And
you put, did you put a velocity thing on there? Because I,
94. I'm seeing, need to be at least 94 miles per hour.
But below?
No, above.
Because why not Chase Burns?
Chase Burns wasn't in this. Chase Burns isn't three or less.
I'm using Fangraphs, so maybe that's...
Oh, I'll take a quick look at that one. But I mean, I wouldn't 2.4. Even say Chase Burns has lost some whiff ability lately, and that's another conversation. But that to me is just right there. Like, that passes the eye test of if you have that cut, it's actually not good for a four-seamer unless you're doing an amazing job really just jamming it inside, right? And setting it up with something else. It's not a characteristic that you want to see with your four-seamers. And by the way, I'm seeing with horizontal 3.5 for Burns on this year. So that's why it's not included. And I maybe should open it up to maybe five and see where we are, but that 3.5 is what I have for this season. So that's what
you're saying. No, I'm using Fangraphs, that's 2.4. But
not to mention, it's an 8% swing strike rate on this year. So point stands. So why is that, Eno? Why is it that adding that cut, even though like we're not even talking about vert here, because like clearly there's tons of vert involved in a lot of these.
But I think that is an important part of the conversation, because cut reduces vert.
Hmm. Well, okay. So, but at the same time, like I'm thinking Ryan Nelson's. Ryan Nelson's one of the highest four-seamer guys here. He's on this list. Not like a 20%, not like the, you know, it's always been an effective out pitch, but not necessarily the destroyer of world swing strike pitch, right?
Yeah. I mean, Buy Stuff Plus, Nelson's is probably the second best on this list.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that I have that's ahead of him is Dylan Cease.
So yeah, Cease, I got to see what it is on
you
this.
You probably have a different number, but I've minus
3.2. Oh, I should have done four.
Anyway, Dylan Cease shows up and he has a 114 stuff plus.
Yeah.
Then it's Ryan Nelson with a 110. You know, then there's not a lot of really excellent fastballs here by stuff plus at least. Mm-hmm. So I think it is picking up what you're talking about. I think one of the other ones is Nick Pivetta.
Yeah, that one I never thought of Nick Pivetta's as a high whiff pitch either.
But he gets a 107 stuff plus. Stuff plus does like Glasnow, so gives him 105, but not like it's not like a standout. And then there's a lot of relievers on my list for different reasons, but I could tell you one thing. I would say that cut reduces vert, and that vert is more of the source of swing and miss. And then the other thing is, I asked a little bit about platoon splits, because my whole thing with the Cubs version of that pitch is that I think that fastball has a better platoon split. So I asked Claude for a couple different questions. And one thing it said was, by Stuff Plus, it said it was essentially a wash. Among the weighted by number of pitches thrown, the cut guys had a 98 Stuff Plus and the non-cut had a 98.1 versus 98.4. So boom. So, you know, the difference is minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the difference comes here.
Mm-hmm.
The platoon splits on normal four seamers
were
104 versus same handed pitchers and 95 against opposite handed. So
it's interesting.
Almost a 10-point platoon penalty,
which
is a classic pattern. Cut four seamers, 99.8 versus same hand, 97 versus opposite hand.
So it's neutral.
It's more platoon neutral. So if you were to have one fastball, a cut fastball, a cut four seam is probably the best fastball. But
okay,
in the era that we're in now,
throwing it is the best fastball.
What's that?
I'm going to say just not throwing it in general. Like at least the normal one is good against one handedness. What I'm hearing is that the cut fastball just in general isn't good against either.
Well, then here's the last part.
Okay.
I used the pitch type grades, mm-hmm. which they're flawed and it's not great, but I just wanted to have some sort of quality thing that wasn't stuff. So this is like on field results. And the cut fastballs, the weighted average was 0.25 runs per 100 versus 0.06 for normal fastballs.
Mm.
So they do well on the field. Now, I think what it is they probably do well by performing the role of a cutter.
Right.
And suppressing balls in play. They don't get the whiffs. This is where I square both of what we're saying. Both of what we're saying is true.
Yeah.
The cut fastball is better for platoon splits. It reduces vert, so it gives you fewer whiffs. And so maybe them grading out overall just has to do with who's using them and when and to which hand. There's a lot of noise in that, but I would say it has to do with run suppression. So the cut fastball, I mean, basically what we're coming to is the cut four-seam fastball is a little bit more like a cutter than it is a four-seam fastball.
Well, okay. I think the question that I have is, let's say you take two fastballs, two four-seamers that have the same exact vert, same exact velocity. What is like the thresholds of horizontal you want, right? Because what I'm...
Well, then again, I still ask you, how many other fastballs does he have?
Sure. Well, that's fair. What is he pairing with is always a fantastic question.
If it's his only fastball, then I would say I don't actually... I'd want maybe less cut.
Well, what I'm trying to do is when I look at...
If it's his only fastball, I want it to be more cut. I want it to be more of a cut fastball. If he has some other fastballs...
Like a prospect coming up and be like, what kind of fastball is this? Is this good? Do I wish that it had... It's a three horizontal. Do I wish it was actually an eight instead? Do I wish, you know, that's what I guess I'm trying to get at is where we see it. And I've innately just said like, all right, this is his primary fastball. It's a four seamer. Oh no, it's near the plane of 1,000 cuts. That means it's not going to do it. And I'm trying to get a good frame of reference for how I think this pitch will perform just based on the horizontal given an equal velocity and vert, right? You with me there?
Yeah. I mean, I think Nelson is actually a pretty interesting way into this conversation and Pivetta, because both these guys are on both of our lists, right?
Right.
And they, no matter what you look at, they have high stuff plus, they've had good results, goodish results in the major leagues. But I think I would prefer, if I had a cut fastball guy, like I'd prefer the Nick Pivetta route, which is to say he has a great breaking ball.
Right. Right.
Because then I can say, oh, the cut fastball will suppress balls in play and be a platoon neutral place. And then he'll get whiffs with the great breaking ball. If we've had any problem with Ryan Nelson coming through so far, has been that the fastball is clearly his best pitch and the other pitches haven't created the whiffs that he's needed at all times.
Absolutely not. The other interesting aspect, and by the way, it's a 12% swing strike rate for Ryan Nelson's four-seamer because he still does get so much vert on it. I mean, really, it's 19 vert and three cuts. I do wonder if there's like a threshold of vert at arm angle that like works.
What about our Dobbins conversation?
Well, the Dobbins one, Dobbins, I wish I could tell you more, guys, but he went from throwing 95 with really good command of all four pitches to 93 and not good command of all four pitches since we talked. And I'm like, well, all right, Dobbins, you know, but he still has the cut at least. And maybe it was a 92 degree day and that affected him so much. So I'm kind of waiting for another.
But weren't we asking also where the whiffs were sort of?
Yeah, that's the thing is like, I was thinking it would be the splitter or the secondaries. And really it's the same thing with Painter, right? And that's another reason why I wanted to bring this up. We know that his 96 does not have the effect of a normal 96 mile per hour four seamer because it has all this cut and it's more hittable. And what I liked when he first came up was that he went, I want to say 20-25% usage of that four seamer, but really nailed down the secondaries, the sweeper, the slider, the changeup a ton. And then he reverted badly. And then now in the most recent one was much better, kind of in between the two. But that really should be the approach of like, look, this is a four-seamer that I can use, but up and into lefties. I can do that against righties. I shouldn't really be aggressive with it. And a lot of times guys have a four-seamer and they just go, all right, I'm just going to throw this in the zone. But how did Kyle Bradish figure this out of always having a sub-3 ERA or whatever? Because he stopped throwing his four-seamer in positions where it would have balls in play. Its ball in play percentage went way down. And that's good. You don't want a cut four seamer to have a high ball on play percentage.
I think one thing that coming out of this is if I was a pitching coach and somebody had a cut fastball like this, I would be like, let's call it a cutter.
Sure. Yeah.
Because then you think about it differently, because then you don't throw it as often to right-handers. Right. And you don't, part of this is if it's not moving in on the right-hander, then that's why it's not as good. But
well, right. It's this is all the other part of the conversation that I alluded to before about gyro sliders or ones that had extra sweep or not. Is I'm thinking about the angle of the bat, and I have an electric screwdriver right now, but whatever, that's what I got. So think about it with a cut four seamer. Generally, the angle of the bat is not going to be flat, especially if you're throwing a four seamer upstairs. Like, there's going to be some angle to it, and I wonder at times if it's like you're missing underneath the bat. So for a four seamer, you're helping it by moving it closer to the to where the barrel is.
Right.
And then if you think about the other side of it, even this is your gyro. So now the screwdriver down kind of at like a 45 degree angle, which of course is extreme, but whatever.
Trying to hit the slider now.
With the slider, again, where are you missing? You're missing underneath it. And you want to be, that means you want to be missing closer to the handle as opposed to where the barrel is. So if you were going to miss it here, now you're going to move over into the barrel, right? This is why you should watch on YouTube, guys. That is where my head is going right now of, right, we have this idea that the bat is just this completely flat, parallel to the ground
item. No, but it always has like an angle. Yeah.
It has a tilt. And so the more that we cut, we either got to go past the end of the bat, we got to go really far, or we got to not try to get as much.
Or just don't throw it righty-righty, you know?
Yeah, where there's that too, right? Don't throw same-handed for that. Yeah. So that's kind of why I'm starting to believe once again, into the gyro slider. Also, let's just be honest, I kind of like the look of it more. I don't know what it is. I just the there it is, nice and straight. But it got like a little bit of the tilt. It feels more.
It is
like
actually kind of hard.
Air. I don't really know what I'm doing. You know,
it is one of those pitches though that doesn't really match that well with how we describe it, because we talk about 0-0 and straight, and then you watch it and you're like, that's not 0-0. It's like this.
Well, okay, hold on. If you have a good camera angle, that's like truly behind the arm on release.
Then you can at least see there's no side to side.
You see, it's completely down.
Yeah,
it's really cool,
but it still looks like it still goes down, and you have to explain. Well, like 0-0 is like what a bullet would do, and you know, it's
right. Okay, just so we're on the same page, a bullet slider is a gyro slider.
Yeah.
Okay. Just I know there's been some confusion with that, and I keep saying that, but then I was like, really?
And when we talk about 0-0, the 0-0 is a theoretical concept based on what a spinless pitch would do.
Right. Exactly. And that's what the bullet is. The bullet is essentially creating
a pitch that has no spin that contributes to movement. The bullet spin.
Yes.
Because a bullet is created to spin through the air so that it doesn't contribute to movement. Because why would you want your bullet to move? You want it to go straight.
That's what I ask myself every morning.
So when you go hunting, in Brooklyn.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a theoretical concept. And why does it look like it has more drop than, like, say a bullet would? Because the bullet is fired, you know, exponentially faster. And so this is thrown in 90 miles an hour, and it actually gravity takes it down. So that's the effect of gravity. That's a 0-0 gyro slider is basically throwing a ball 90 plus miles or 89 plus miles an hour, and what the effect of gravity would do to it. That's it.
Yeah. So, I mean, so now obviously gets you guys thinking, right? Okay, Nick, you just talked to me about cut fastballs and just kind of like, there needs to be more. There needs to be something else attached to it. And by the way, I actually did just notice Brandon Young is someone who I've undervalued, I think, this year. He actually comps to me like a worse Sean Burke. And he just, you know, he has a splitter as his main secondary versus the slider and the curve that Sean Burke has really come into form. I mean, if you want a good example of Sean Burke's slider, just watch Tuesday night's game. That was impeccable. Like 90% strikes down and away on the corner incessantly to right-handers. It's truly fantastic. But I do want to mention Brandon Young, who's on this list here from 2025 with 2.7 inches of horizontal. It's now up to 5.7. And what do we have? We now have a 12% swing strike rate. It's a better pitch for him because he didn't have as much cut on it, right? And that's the thought I'm having is, should we be encouraging less cut, essentially, as much as possible, or use it only sparingly against opposite-handed batter and get inside on it, right? I think Young is the perfect example of why we should be trying to avoid getting that cut action.
I guess a perfect theoretical fastball approach would be something more along the lines of Zach Wheeler, who has a four seam that does have arm side movement. He has a cutter that is separate from that, and he has a sinker, right?
Right. Oh, the RAS pack.
Right. The RAS pack. Right. So if you have three fastballs, you can do that. But if for whatever reason, you could either have a cutter or a cut four seam and you can't have both, then what's ideal? Because the cut four seam might be something you could throw to both hands, whereas a cutter is not necessarily a primary fastball. It is for some people, I know,
right.
But that isn't what people aim to be. Like Corbin Burns didn't come to the major leagues and be like, I'm going to be a cutter primary. He had to fall on his face and then go to the cutter. That's usually what happens to the guys who are cutter primary. Mm. So, you know, I guess what you're saying with the cut four seam guys is, you know, well, at least you're not cutter primary, right? And this is at least more like a four seam. And maybe you can't throw both of those pitches for whatever reason. Or maybe you can't throw a good sinker. Maybe cut four seam guys can't throw a good sinker.
You know, also, I mean, I this is insane because it was 91.7 miles per hour.
Like, Pivetta doesn't have a good sinker. Nelson doesn't have a good sinker, you know?
No. Just another example of a cut four seamer that is not a whiff pitch. I mean, honestly, I don't know why I didn't think of this first. Sonny Gray. Oh my gosh. This thing is a 91.7 mile per hour four seamer with 11 inches of vert, but it is -0.7 horizontal and it has a 5% swing strike rate this year. Like, again, more and more examples of just this is how it works like that. So what I am spinning up for you right now, you know, is who has four seamers with at least 10 inches of horizontal and at least 16 inches of vert, right?
So this is more of the two-planer.
More of the two-planer. So this is the other side of it, right? As I would say more of the extreme of like, cool, you have horizontal. And I didn't want to do...
Have a cutter.
Well, we could talk about that because some of them do. And I have this from 2025 to 2026. And so I'll give you guys the leaderboard of that as we change our conversation, but we got to take first a quick break. So I wanted to keep in some vert for this table, right? This is a table of guys from 2025 and 2026 with at least 16 inches of vert and at least 10 inches of horizontal. I've removed the velocity denominator too, or at least requirement. So 2025, we had Kevin Gausman, Tony Gonsolin, Logan Henderson, Tyler Mahle, and Eury Pérez. That's it. These are right-handers, by the way. We're not including lefties right now. And then in 2026, this year, we have Shane Bieber, Slade Ciccone, Kevin Gausman, Logan Henderson, Tyler Mahle, Eury Pérez, Cody Ponce, and AJ Smith-Shawver. Okay?
You have a vertical aspect to this too. So it wasn't just horizontal. Because I was like,
right. So I have it at Paul 16.
Steens and Nolan McClain.
I did that on purpose because I kind of thought of those as just lowest arm angles. And then maybe I should have done 14. But in some way of having something interesting, like a lot of these guys that we mentioned before with cut have close to 15, 16 vert as well. I mean, not Sonny Gray, not Dobbins necessarily. Those are like more true cutters in my view. But I wanted to bring up these. And Mahle, Pérez, and Henderson certainly have whiff favored four seamers here. Ponce was interesting. I kind of liked it a lot. And what I'm also noticing is that versus lefties versus righties, which one is better? Mahle and Henderson have had better results against lefties with it. While the rest of them, Bieber, Ciccone, Gausman, Ponce, and Smith-Shawver, and Pérez have performed better against righties with it. I think that might have to do with more of the approaches that they have. Because, I mean, Henderson and Mahle both favor a changeup or a splitter.
There's a velo aspect too. If you're Smith Schauber, yeah, you throw hard. You're using that as an aggressive pitch. If you're Tyler Mahle, you don't throw hard, and you're trying to sneak around with that pitch.
Right. At the very least, I need to probably put different parameters to really get a better understanding. But we have whiff pitches here.
Yeah.
As opposed to the others where we don't, right? And it's probably because in order to get horizontal, you have to have a lower arm angle. So if you're able to get any sort of vert on it with that horizontal, that could not be
dead zone. We could be getting off of the dead zone.
Right. Exactly. So,
and what we saw with Nelson and Pivetta and a lot of the cut ride guys is it isn't getting off the dead zone. Nelson and Pivetta have high arm angles.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So just wanted to give you guys that frame of reference when thinking about four seamers, what's good, what's bad. I haven't fully established it. You know, as it's fully established, I think one of the best things, you know, said was, well, does he have a cutter? Does he have a sinker? And you notice maybe that Logan Henderson has a cutter. Essentially, the slider is a cutter.
And it was a big deal for him because he was forcing changeup and he had some issues getting righties out.
Absolutely. So adding that helps massively for him. Just always throw a cutter.
And if you, I guess what I'm asking you, if you have a cut ride fastball, I want you to have a sinker.
Yes.
And it, not a lot of people do. There's not a lot of people on that list that have a sinker. In fact,
you know, it's so fascinating. I mean, like, okay, so throwing a cutter, by the way, everyone, as I use my Baja Blast baseball, is interesting to me because it's always about coming on the side of the ball, right? I mean, that's just how I think about it, is it's the easiest way for me to throw a cutter was taking my four seamer grip, and you could just tilt it slightly if you want, just a little off that plane of right behind the baseball. An easy way for some is to actually reverse it so that the horseshoe is not on your middle finger. It's by your index finger instead. So that means it's easier for you to slide off on release. Regardless, what you are doing is you're essentially leaning towards supination when you are throwing a cutter. And if you're leaning towards supination instead of pronating, that should also mean that your wrist can get more on the side of the ball, which would then open up, in my view, for a sinker of some kind, for a two-seamer, if you are able to do the cutter. It's why we talk about sinker sweeper guys. They need a cutter for the lefties, and that's often what happens. You see Christian Scott throwing one now, right? We saw Clark Schmidt get into one, and so on and so forth. So if you have a cut four-seamer, you already are getting on the side of it. I would imagine, and I could be missing a lot here, that it would be easier than others to add that sinker as well. Right?
So I had 51 pitchers that have thrown a cutting four seam this year. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the starter versus reliever designation. So I had 51 pitchers that did that, and 9 of them throw a cutter 100 times as well. So these are the guys that I think are just extreme supinators that just throw a lot of different supinated pitches.
Yeah.
Sonny Gray, Pete Fairbanks, Justin Slayton, Ryan Gusto, Trent Thornton is a big spin the ball guy. Oh, Sonny Gray. So that's that list.
Yeah.
18 of the 51 threw a sinker at least 100 times.
Okay.
This list is a little bit more interesting. Brandon Woodruff.
Yes.
Kyle Bradish.
Got to be Rasmussen and Schlittler in there too, right?
Why not?
Oh, because it's not much cut fastball. That's why.
I don't have the cut four seam fastball.
It's a cutter instead. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I've got Bradish, Elder, and Woodruff among starting pitchers. Caleb Killian, Ryan Zephyrjohn. Sonny Gray's on this list too because he also throws a sinker.
Yeah, because of course he does.
No easy answer, but I do think if you have a young pitcher that's coming up that has this cut fastball, you want to ask, what other fastball do you throw? It'd be a little bit difficult for me to go whole hog on a young pitcher that's just got this cut fastball,
right?
You know, I would want a sinker or a cut. I'd rather a sinker, really, most of all.
Yeah. I mean, it's right because we want the cut four seamer to lefties and we want the sinker for righties.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, this is age old, guys. You want pitches that go inside and move inside.
Yeah.
Right. It can be very dangerous. I mean, I remember this is the quote that will forever live in my head rent free. It's Sonny Gray going to the Yankees. And they said, they told me to throw my four seamer upstairs because it had a lot of spin.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's just that like as a Yankee fan,
his four seam doesn't have his four seam.
Well, it spins a lot. It just, yeah. Well, I guess it's cut, you know, like you could say, I mean, it's, oh no, that is not it at all. So you don't want to throw those upstairs is my point. You want to get those inside.
A little side moment here. Andrew Morris. I think Andrew Morris is going to be my next year's Griffin Jacks.
Oh, interesting.
Not because he has anything to do with Griffin Jacks in terms of Arsenal.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, a pretty good sweeper, but like the reason that I like Andrew Morris is born of this analysis. He has a cut ride fastball, but he also has a true cutter and he also has a sinker.
Mm.
He has a true starter's arsenal. And what I also love is that he's 97 miles an hour out of the pen right now. And I bet you they're going to stretch him out next year because he has in 2024, he threw 133 innings. Even this year, he's started games. And I know that he's plugged a hole for them in that bullpen. But the Twins are a team that I think would give him a shot. I don't know why they didn't give Jax a shot. So maybe I'm reading the Twins
they
wrong.
They did. And then they put him in early the pen. And they kept him there. Yeah.
They haven't given Morris a shot at starting in the big leagues. So,
you know what's really funny to me?
I think he'll get another shot.
I loved Griffin Jax initially when he started beginning the transition to starting rotation because his four seamer and cutter were so good.
Mm-hmm.
And he stopped throwing them. Both of them, like they leaned into the.
But now he's hurt. So, like, what if there's like a hurt aspect to it?
I mean, maybe it was the blister and everything that did that too. Yeah, if you remember that. But that just always cracks me up so much that like he was a four seamer cut guy, and all of a sudden like yeah, go don't do that. Like what? No, that's so good. By the way, everyone, I do have to mention. Yes, I did do the same exact things for left-handers as well. Just so you know, just to get an idea. And we treat left-handers and right-handers a little differently because lefties are going to see a ton more right-handers. So the problem that they have that right-handed pitchers have of how do I get out right-handers is not as prevalent with lefties because they just always have a sinker. Like if you're a lefty without a sinker, I don't know what you're doing, honestly. Like it's just so easy just to have a basic sinker and have success against them because lefties have no idea what to do with that. But I have a very small grouping here. The first one are the ones who have that cut four seamer, right? All I have are under 94. And it's...
yeah, because you had the velocity penalty for lefties.
Right.
And
no left-handed starter qualified in 2025, apparently. Now 26, it's Andrew Alvarez, David Peterson, and Jordan Wicks. Which is
yeah,
not,
that's David Peterson's kind of leaned into it more with the Cubs,
right?
Not too surprisingly,
and right, and then I mean, you could hope that like, all right, like David Peterson has done a good job of getting it inside at times to right-handers and had those successful games a little bit with it. Andrew Alvarez needs to do that more. Like he has to get that four-seamer more inside. And Jordan Wicks, I'll just one day hope that he can be something there. I will find this funny though. The two planers, you probably know one off the top of your head easily, who had two planer is 16 inches of vert and at least 10 inches of horizontal from the left side. There are four in 2025 and only three in 2026, but that's really because one hasn't really appeared much this year. All of them start with the letter C. I don't know what it is about left-handers, but they have to have a first name that starts with C. Can you name any of them, do you think, of these guys? I mean, there's one that everyone knows that I would know.
Cam Schlittler or whatever? No, lefty. He's not lefty.
Lefty.
What? See, I'm really bad at trivia. This is.
Oh, I see.
It's painful for me.
Well, I'll tell you the worst one. He's part of your Giants. He has a changeup that's really good in this four seamer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Carson Wisenhunt.
Carson Wisenhunt's on there, right? 17 inches of vert and 10 inches of horizontal.
Christopher Sanchez.
Sorry?
Christopher Sanchez? No.
Christopher Sanchez, no.
Slot's too low.
Oh, actually, you know what? There's one pitcher from 2025 and a new one in 2026. There's a pitcher who hasn't appeared this year. Or maybe he did for a second and he's off of it now. Carlos Rodon is one.
Oh, nice.
17.6 and 11. Cole Reagans, you know?
Oh, duh. Not and top of head right now, dude.
Last year, right, of course. Last year, Cade Povich had it. 17.4 and 10.5. And this year,
what's happened to his fastball this year?
I don't know. Actually, I think he has more cut this year on it. But Connelly Early has a 16 and a 10.5 horizontal. So look, I'll put it this way. Reagans and Rodon obviously need velocity a bit to get
yes,
there.
Cade Povich is cutting his four seam more this year.
That's and then, but you see Early at 94 with a 16 and 10.5, it does get me a little excited there. I mean, if he's healthy, of course.
But what we're theoretically saying, though, is that these pitches are better against same-handed, and for lefties, there's fewer same-handed.
Right. I mean, for example, Cole Reagans actually does better versus righties, but I think that's because he gets it at 12.8 as opposed to the 10, the 11. Mm. And, you know, throwing a changeup underneath it is absurdly effective too, right? I don't know. I gotta probably change the parameters a little bit just to get a better sample of where the thresholds are. I think it is pretty easy to say though, okay, cool, cut four seamers are never gonna be whiff pitches, guys. They just really are not whiff pitches. And when we assess these guys in general, if we're looking for a whiff four seamer, that's the goal of it. Not with cut. We want to move away from cut.
There's like this interesting continuum in my head right now that comes from like the 0-0 line.
Yeah.
And then goes down in that fastball quadrant that's always up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like the closer you are to the 0-0 line, the more you're platoon neutral, but maybe less, but like whiff neutral or like whiff negative.
Right.
And the more you go down towards horizontal, the more you are not platoon neutral, but whiff positive against same handed, right?
Right. So like the stretching it out like this, you're saying, right? It's
That's sort of that.
That's an interesting way of putting it, right? So Kyle Bradish, stop lauding that four seamer in play. I'm happy you're throwing sinkers. Even as bad as it is, like that's still better, I think, than leaning too much into four seamers against right handers. And throw more sliders and curveballs for strikes, please. Thank you so much. before we end this one, I want to give you one last opportunity. I know you sent me a massive list of K-BB
changes. Oh, don't worry about that. That was just
I know, but it's one. Can you tell me, actually, Eno, who is at the very top of your risers?
Jacob Lopez, baby. I don't think it was May, dude.
Gavin Williams, Sean Burke, Christian Javier, Kyle Lakehue, who's someone who actually I was thinking about bringing up today. He is going to be the roundup focus, I think, tonight, depending on how well the rest of the start went. It was five innings. I think
he pitched well today. We have in our Discord a bunch of Lehi, I don't even know how to pronounce Lehi believers. They have some sort of acronym that doesn't make sense to me. Those words don't go together.
Well, it's going to be My Fair Lehi.
So that works better than lay believers.
Belabers.
Belabers.
but to me, he's someone I think we should talk about next week. He has 3.4 horizontal on his four seamer and is not a whiff pitch. 5% swing strike rate in this one. He actually got extra cut on it this game, but 73.3 feet of extension. And the real question is the sliders, sweepers, and curveballs, which did not get whiffs at all here. He doesn't really command them well, but he has, as you see, the K-minus walk rate that's improving. So we'll see. We'll talk about this next week. You know what you have coming out that we're going to be checking out? When are your next rankings so that we can...
Next rankings is next week.
Drinks.
We're going to have next rankings. We could maybe do a ranking episode. I'll do rankings midweek next week.
Okay.
And I am working on a piece about Skeens. Mm-hmm. And some of the work that we just did in terms of like using stuff and platoon splits and pitch movements to kind of investigate... I had been practicing on that for a different question I've answered asking about the Rays. Oh. So it's a different pitch. It's a different situation, but it's a similar investigation about the Rays. So I'm going to have something on that soon.
Nice. Well, all right, guys, that is going to do it. If you are in Pittsburgh on Saturday night, you're going to the PNC Park at the Pittsburgh Pirates game. I'll be there. So let me know if you're around. I will love to say hi. All right, that is it. My name is Nick Pollock. On behalf of Vino Saris, my wonderful guest, we will talk about the craft of pitching again next week.